I'd like this evening to turn to the book of Job. We'll be in the 38th chapter, Job 38. Just by way of background leading up to Job 38, the book of Job, of course, is a very stirring book. It is really a book that is filled with God. Throughout the book, God is seen as a God who delivers. He is seen as glorious, as just, as loving, as powerful, as sovereign, righteous, unsearchable, wise, and even wrathful. The book opens, of course, with a record of the prosperity of Job. We see that in the first five verses. We're told something about his person, that he was a righteous person. And then we're told about his material wealth, his material prosperity. He's a happy, healthy, wealthy individual. We see that he had a wife, had 10 children, and he had an endorsement from God. Remember there in Job 1 and verse 8, God said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job?" That's quite an endorsement right there, my servant. There's none like him. There's none like him in the earth. A perfect and upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth evil. So he had quite an endorsement from the Lord himself. But as we know, there came a day in the life of Job that brought great adversity to his life. In one day, without any notice whatsoever, his 10 children are killed and his wealth is taken. We see that in verses 13 through verse 19 of chapter 1. Everything seemingly, and I put the emphasis on seemingly, everything seemingly falls apart. Job bore his unimaginable calamities really with amazing submission. He said there in Job 1, verses 21 and 22, "Naked came I out of my mother's womb, and naked shall I return thither. The Lord gave, and the Lord hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. In all this, Job sinned not, nor charged God foolishly." Then in chapter 2, in addition to everything that has happened, we see that Job is smitten with boils from the top of his head to the bottom of his feet. So now his children are gone, his wealth is gone, and by the time we get to Job chapter 2, his health is gone. No doubt sorrow fills his heart. Pain fills his body. And he's sitting in the ashes. And we read there in Job chapter 2 that he's scraping himself with a broken piece of pottery. Then his wife comes to him and says, "Curse God and die." And then we read in verse 10 of chapter 2, "In all this did not Job sin with his lips." That's amazing. It's amazing. While Job was sitting there in the ashes, mourning his situation, three of his friends arrive. We're told in verse 11 of chapter 2 that they had come to mourn with him and to comfort him. And they wept with him. They did so for 7 days. Or for 7 days, they did not say a single word. Job chapter 2, verses 12 and 13. And that was the best comfort that they provided Job, was with their silence. But for 7 days, they wept with Job. They didn't say a word. Then in chapter 3, we see that Job is now in perplexity by what has happened. And he breaks the silence. For 7 days, there's been silence. And he breaks the silence there in chapter 3, verses 2 through 13, by saying, basically, I wish I'd never been born. Why did God bring me into this world? Job's friends, in their desire to know and understand the why of Job's suffering, they wanted to know why. Why is this happening? Why did this happen to Job? And they began to analyze. And they came to the conclusion that due to the severity of Job's suffering, he must have committed some grievous sin. Their conclusion was that God was punishing Job. And then from that point on, most of the book records the conversations that took place between Job and his friends. And there's some cycles. There's a cycle of his friends accusing him, and then Job defending himself. Again, they're accusing him of some sin. In chapters 4 and 5, you have the discourse of Eliphaz, which is one of Job's friends. And then Job's reply in chapter 6 and chapter 7. After Job's reply, another friend spoke up by the name of Bildad. We read of his first discourse in chapter 8. And we read of Job's reply in chapters 9 and 10. Then we have the third friend, Zophar, and he speaks in chapter 11. And then in chapters 12 through 14, you again have Job's reply. And then the cycle starts all over again. Eliphaz, for a second time, speaks in chapter 15. And then in chapter 16 and 17, again, you have Job's response, which is basically a defense of himself. Then you have Bildad speaking in chapter 18 and Job's response in chapter 19. Then again, Zophar speaks in chapter 20, and you have Job's response in chapter 21. Then Eliphaz gives another, this would be the third, discourse in chapter 22, and then you have Job's reply in chapters 22 and 23. Then Bildad speaks again in chapter 25. And then you have Job's response in chapters 26 through chapter 31. And while all this is going on, Job's misery is really getting worse. He says at one point, miserable comforters are ye all. And Job, as the discourses go on, as you follow them through, Job began to waver. And he began, in his defense, he began to insist upon his own righteousness. And there came a point where he began to think that God was ignoring him. God was not answering. And God was treating him unfairly. In his last response to Eliphaz, there in chapters 22 and 23, he made a statement. He stated that he desired to defend himself before God. Notice in Job 23, verses 3 and 4. Oh, that I knew where I might find him, that I might come even to his seat. I would order my cause before him and fill my mouth with arguments. Again, Job is now defending himself, and he says, I wish I could approach God and defend myself before God and make arguments before God. So you see, Job is beginning to go down a very dangerous road as these discourses go on. And in his last response to Bildad, Bildad spoke in chapters 26 through 31. He desires that God would respond to him. And if God would just respond to him, that Job would defend himself before God. Again, Job is headed down a wrong path. Then in chapter 32, in verse 1, chapter 32 and verse 1. So these three men ceased to answer Job because he was righteous in his own eyes. But sitting by was another young man. His name is Elihu. He's younger than all the rest. And he'd been sitting there silently, but now he speaks. The three friends are now silent. And Elihu speaks up in verse 2, then was of chapter 32, then was kindled the wrath of Elihu. We see that his wrath was against the three friends, against Job, because he justified himself rather than God. Elihu was upset that Job justified himself. And Elihu was upset with the three friends because they made accusations and they were unable to pin anything on Job. And they jumped to conclusions. So this Elihu speaks in chapter 32 through chapter 37. And again, he condemns Job, but for the most part, he condemns the three friends. That brings us to Job chapter 38. Elihu is done speaking at the end of chapter 37. Verse 1, then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind. And I believe that this is the climax of the book. The Lord shows up. The Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind and said, keep in mind, the last words of Job were, if I could just get to the presence of God, I would defend myself, I would make arguments, showing that I am righteous. Those were the last words of Job. Verse 2, who is this that darkeneth counsel by words without knowledge? I believe though that was spoken to the three friends and Elihu. Then he speaks to Job. Gird up now thy loins like a man, for I will demand of thee, and answer thou me. What he's saying there in verse 3 is, Job, brace yourself. Again, Job had said, if I could appear before God, I would argue my case. God comes on the scene and he says, Job, brace yourself. You will not question me, but I will question you. Prepare yourself. That's what it means to gird up the loins. And then in chapters 38 through chapter 42, God proceeds to ask Job over 180 questions. That's a lot of questions. Job did not answer a single one. I do not believe they were meant to be answered. God's first series of questions takes place in chapters 38 through 39. Chapter 40, verses 3 through 5, you have Job's response or the effect that these questions had upon Job. Then another series of questions begin with verse 6 of chapter 40 through chapter 41. And then in chapter 42, verses 1 through 6, again you see the effect that these questions had upon Job. These questions were very powerful questions. They were very convicting and penetrating questions. And as God asked these questions, we don't hear anything from Job. I believe as God is asking these questions, Job is standing there with his mouth open, not really knowing what to say, not answering a single question. 180 questions, over 180 questions. He didn't answer a single one. We'll summarize and paraphrase the interrogation without reading the whole thing, because that's chapters 38 through 42. There are many interesting questions, and then we want to consider these questions, and then we want to make application. Why God asked these questions. The message tonight is God, the answer. God, the answer. First of all, God questions Job regarding inanimate manner, beginning with verse 4. Where was thou when I laid the foundations of the earth? Remember Job's last words? I will fill my mouth with arguments before God. In other words, I want to know why these things have happened in my life. God begins by asking, Job, where were you when I created the universe? It was as if he were saying, Job, you weren't there. You weren't there. In other words, Job, you don't know how I created the universe. Job, I laid the foundations of the earth all by myself. You weren't there. In other words, I didn't need your intelligence then, I don't need it now. I didn't need your input then, I didn't need your advice, and I didn't need your help. And I don't now. That's basically what God is saying to Job. God asks in verse 7, paraphrasing, where were you when I created Mercury and Venus? When the angels shouted with joy. Where were you, Job? Verses 8 through 11, he questions Job regarding oceanography. He says, where were you, Job, when I created the waters? Where were you when I set the bounds of the seas and the oceans and the rivers? God is revealing himself in these questions. He's revealing himself as the creator. He's revealing himself as the controller of all things. In verses 12 through 38, God asked Job questions concerning the marvels of the present world. Notice Verse 12, he says, "Hast thou commanded the morning since thy days, and caused the day spring to know his place?" In other words, Job, in all your days, have you ever made the sun rise? Job, in all your days, have you ever made the sun set? Job, do you know how to do that? Do you know how to make the sun rise? Do you know how to make the sun set? Because I do. This is what God is saying to Job. You see, in order to make the sun rise, in order to make the sun set, you would have to be able to control the earth's rotation. And you can take all the people, all the population, if they worked together, they could not control the earth's rotation. But God says, "Job, have you ever made the sun rise? I control the earth's rotation." The whole point is, God is wiser than any of us. God is stronger than any of us. In verse 16, God focuses upon the depth and the breadth of sea and land. The point is that man is extremely limited in his knowledge. He asked Job, "Do you know anything about the breadth of the sea?" In verse 17, "Have the gates of death been opened unto thee? Have you seen beyond the gates of death, Job? Do you know anything about it? Or hast thou seen the doors of the shadow of death?" Job, have you seen personally what lies beyond death? In verse 18, he asked Job, "Have you comprehended the vastness of the earth? Do you have any idea?" In verses 19 through 21, God asks Job about light and darkness. And he's basically saying, "Job, where is the dwelling place of light? Where is the dwelling place of darkness? Where were these when they were separated, light and darkness?" Can you, Job, can you take light or darkness and direct its course? Because I can. Can you do that, Job? Were you there when light and darkness had their bounds assigned to them by me? Verses 22 through 30, God asked Job about the snow and the hail and the rain and the frost. He is saying, "Job, do you know how to store up snow? Do you know how to store up hail? Job, do you know how to make it rain? Do you know how many snowflakes are scheduled to fall? Because I do. Do you know, Job?" God is revealing himself in these questions. You see, in providing snow, hail, rain, and frost, God exercises his sovereign control. And he's reminding Job, "I'm in control here, Job. I'm in control." Verses 31 through 33, he turns Job's attention to the stars. He says, "Job, do you know the laws of the heavens? Can you establish their rule?" Verse 34, "Can you speak so that the clouds will cover you with rain?" That's what God does. Can you do that, Job? Verse 35, "Job, can you call the lightnings to come? Can you send lightning and control it? In verse 37, he says, Job, can you, in all your wisdom, count the clouds? Can you prevent it from raining? Can you cause it to rain? Can you prevent it from raining? So in these questions, whether we focus on the earth or the sea or the rising or the setting of the sun or the snow or the hail or the stars or the rain, the point is this to Job. Job, you're ignorant and you're impotent. I know all things, and I have all power. You and I tonight do not know how to make any of these things work that God has questioned Job about. We are surrounded by mysteries. We are surrounded by things that God simply does. God knows, and God knows how. And that is the point of these questions. God is reminding Job, I know, and I can. And he who controls all of these things can certainly undertake for every care and every need of my life. And this is what God is reminding Job of. He then questions Job regarding animate nature. In verses 39 through 41 of chapter 38, he asks Job if he's able and if he knows how to provide food for the lions when they're hungry. If he's able to provide food for the ravens. God is saying, Job, I do that. I'm in control. You see, God can and does. Poor raccoon just doesn't know how to cross the street. But God can and does lead the raccoon to cross the road at the very moment that a car is traveling the same road, striking the raccoon, thus providing food for the raven. God does that. Not you and I. God does that. In chapter 39, he says in verse 1, Knowest thou the time when the wild goats of the rock bring forth? Or canst thou mark when the hinds do calve? Canst thou number the months that they fulfill? Or knowest thou the time when they bring forth? In other words, Job, are you present at the birth of animals worldwide? Because I am. I'm there for every one of them. Do you know when the mountain goats bring forth? Do you know when the calves bring forth? Think about it, Job. I'm there for all of those things. Keep in mind, Job said, I'll fill my mouth with arguments, present my case before God. You see, every deer that gives birth, God is there. Every mountain goat that gives birth, God is there. God is reminding Job of these things. In verses 5 through 8 of chapter 39, God asks Job, Who hath sent out the wild ass free, or who hath loosed the bands of the wild ass? Job, do you think that wild donkey is unpredictable? I'm the one that set him loose. And I'm the one that brings him under control. What do you know about this, Job? Can you do any of these things? And then he goes on with the wild oxen, verses 9 through 12. He says, Job, I know how to bind the ox. I know how to use him. He's mine. In verse 13, he asks, gavest thou the goodly wings unto the peacocks, or wings and feathers to the ostrich? Job, was it you that gave the beautiful feathers to the peacock? Was it you that gave feathers and wings to the ostrich? And then he goes on to say that even the most stupid of creatures are so by design. Notice verses 14 through 18, talking about the ostrich. He says, which leaveth her eggs in the earth and warmeth them in the dust, and forgetteth that the foot may crush them, or that the wild beast may break them. She is hardened against her young ones as though they were not hers. Her labor is in vain without fear, because God hath deprived her of wisdom, neither hath he imparted to her understanding. He says, you know that stupid ostrich, Job? I'm the one who made him stupid. I'm the one who created him that way. I'm the one who designed all of that. Again, all of these questions are saying that I'm in control of everything. Verses 19 through 25 of chapter 39, God asked Job about the horse. Job, did you give the horse its strength? Job, do you know how to do that? Verses 26 through 30, he says, Job, is it by your wisdom that the hawk soars? Is it by your wisdom that the bird flies south? Is it at your command, Job, that the eagle mounts up and makes his nest on high? So again, whether we consider the lions, the birth of the mountain goat, the freedom of the wild donkey, the insubordination of the ox, the stupidity of the ostrich, the might of the horse, or the flight of the hawk, or the eagle, the point is the same. Job, you can't do any of these things. But I can. And I do. Job, you are absolutely powerless in all of these things. I'm in control. These questions reveal all the intricacies involved in sustaining the universe. You stop and think about everything that is involved in just sustaining the universe. I mean, you just stop and think of what is involved in sustaining our life. It's amazing. And God does it all. And he's simply asking Job these questions, rhetorical questions, to make a point. To make a point to Job. And he who knows all of these things and controls all of these things, that being God, can certainly undertake for every care and every need of my life. So God asks one question after another. The application of this, again, these were rhetorical questions. They weren't designed to be answered. They were designed to make a point. The point of every question was to show that God is bigger than Job. The point of every question is that God is bigger than you and I. The point of every question, as we've said before, is this. There is a God, and Job, you're not him. That's the design of these questions. Now, I find it amazing that just when Job is beginning to falter, God shows up. And he begins to ask these questions. The questions were designed to provoke thought. And with each question, God challenged the thinking of Job. And with these questions, God challenged Job's competence to judge God's ways. You see, when you and I begin to analyze or judge God's ways, we're on very dangerous ground. We do not have the competence to judge the ways of God. And this is what God is reminding Job. This is what God is reminding Job. I'm in control. You're not. The questions were designed to reveal the greatness of God. I mean, you read through those questions, and you cannot help but see the greatness of God. And the questions were designed to reveal the insignificance of man. And as you read those questions, you see not only the greatness of God, but you see the insignificance of man. These questions reveal and remind us that God is much more complex than our finite minds can figure out. You and I know so very, very little about God. So very little. And these questions are designed to prove that. You see, we have this crippling tendency to limit God to our own understanding. But these questions reveal and remind us that God is bigger than we can imagine. And God is greater than we can imagine. And we understand some things about God. But for the most part, we have very, very, very little understanding of God. I mean, God would have to be pretty small for you and I to understand Him. God is much bigger than our understanding. The point is, we don't have to understand God. We have to trust Him. We have to trust Him. These questions reveal and remind Job that God is the Creator. He is the Sustainer. He is revealing and reminding Job of His infinity, of His vastness, His immensity. With these questions, He's reminding Job that God excels all else. He is omnipotent. He is omniscient. He is sovereign. With these questions, God is revealing and reminding Job of God's universal reign. He is saying, Job, everywhere, there isn't a place, there isn't a corner in the universe where I do not reign supreme. The questions reaffirm God's right as God. We sometimes, in defense of our own so-called rights, forget the rights of God. And these questions affirm God's right as God. If God wants to kill every one of your children, that's His right. If God wants to take every dime you have and every ounce of health that you have, that's the right of God, because He's God. And this is what God is reminding Job of. You'll notice the whole discourse of Job's friends is around the subject of Job's suffering. And his friends thought that they had it figured out why Job was suffering. And Job was wondering, why? Why has all of this happened to me? But you read all of those questions, And Job's suffering is never once referred to. Not one single time. The point of the questions is this, Job, I'm God. And I'm not indifferent to your needs. I am God, and I can. That's the point of the questions. The questions are designed as a reminder that God is smarter, God is wiser, and God is stronger than you and I. He again is saying to Job, Job, I know what I'm doing. You don't need to question me. I know what I'm doing. And I don't need you. And I don't need anyone else. You see, the friends of Job were trying to solve the problems of life. And God's questions basically were this. I don't need you or your friends to solve the problems of life. I'm God. I'm God. I don't need you to fix anything. I don't need you to figure anything out. I'm God. Oh, that we would learn these lessons. Job learned them. These questions are a revelation and a call. You see, it's easy in our suffering to become self-centered. And anybody who suffers will reach a time in their suffering where they have self-centeredness. I don't believe there's any exception. So we have this tendency to become self-centered rather than God-centered. And when Job's friends stop talking, the reason they stopped talking, we're told, is because Job was defending his righteousness. Job was defending his righteousness. That is, Job was becoming self-centered rather than God-centered. And then what happened? What happened when Job was becoming self-centered rather than God-centered? God showed up and began to ask these questions to Job. Why? To refocus Job's attention. To get Job's attention off of himself and upon God. When he lost his 10 children, he said that God gave and God taketh away. Blessed be the name of God. He was God-centered. But as the days went on, and as the discourses went on, and as Job is trying to defend himself against false accusations, Job is beginning to center his attention and focus his attention upon self. So God shows up. And by asking these questions, he refocuses Job's attention, causing Job to realize, I'm the answer. His friends wanted to know why. Why is Job suffering? Why did these things happen? And God shows up and he's basically saying this. I'm the answer. Why? God. God. We don't need to always know why. When we need to know why, God will show us. But the answer to Job's problem, why am I suffering? And the answer to our problems, whatever they might be, is not an explanation about God. The answers to all of our problems is a revelation of God. Is God revealing himself to us? That's what God did when he asked these questions to Job. You see, what Job needed in his sufferings really wasn't answers. And people say all the time, if I only knew why, wouldn't change anything. That's not what you need. Job did not need answers. What did Job need? The same thing you and I need. He needed a clear vision of God. And God shows up and he begins to ask question after question after question. And Job begins to see God more clearly. This is the answer. To see God more clearly. That's the answer. Yet, just like Job, just like Job's friends, we spend an awful lot of time looking for answers. When all we really need is a more clear vision of God. With these questions, God is saying to Job, I'm the answer. And that's true today. Whatever our problems are, God's the answer. He's the answer. God Himself is the answer. Again, he's telling Job, Job, you don't have to figure out why you're suffering. Job, you do not need to be able to explain me. You just have to come to the realization that God is so great that He is beyond explanation. Job, you don't need to explain me. Job, you don't need to understand me. But Job, you need to trust me. You need to lean upon me. You need to cleave to me. You need to draw from me. Why? Because I'm the answer. Because I'm the answer. I'm what you need. With these questions, God is teaching Job to trust, not based on why, but based upon who. Who God is. Notice the effect that this had upon Job. Job chapter 40. Then Job answered the Lord. This was after the first round of questions. He didn't answer any of the questions. He said, behold, I'm vile. Just a little while ago, he was going to fill his mouth with arguments. I'm vile. What shall I answer thee? God, what can I say? What can I say? I'm vile. I will lay my hand upon my mouth. In other words, I'm not going to say anything. Once have I spoken, but I will not yet answer. Yea, twice, but I will proceed no further. God spoke, and it silenced Job. We need that. We need to experience what Job experienced. Job chapter 42, verse 3. Job 42, notice verse 1, it says, then Job answered the Lord and said, I know that thou canst do everything. This unveiling of God, by God asking questions, brought Job to this point. Lord, I don't need to know why. I know you can do everything. We need to be brought there. And that no thought can be withholden from thee. Who is he that hideth counsel without knowledge? Therefore I uttered that I understood not. He said, I spoke and I didn't know. I spoke, and I didn't understand. But you see, Job is now realizing, I don't need to understand. All I need to know is, God, you can do everything. All I need to do is trust the Lord. Verse 5 and verse 6, he said, I have heard of thee by the hearing of the ear, but now mine eye seeth thee. Again, that's what we need. What we need is not an answer. What we need is a clear vision of God. And that is our answer. But now mine eye seeth thee. Again, here's a man who is beginning to defend himself. He says, wherefore I abhor myself and repent in dust and ashes. So just as Job was beginning to falter and to go down a wrong path, God revealed himself by asking questions. And Job realized his own insignificance. In all of our problems, in all of our needs, what we need to experience, what we need is not answers from man. What we need is to experience, as Job did, the majesty and the grandeur of God. That's what Job experienced. These questions caused Job to experience just how majestic God is. When that happens, you won't have any problem trusting Him. You won't have any trouble leaning upon Him, drawing from Him. Oh, that these truths concerning God and these questions would sink deep into our hearts. And if they do, that will change our perspective. We'll come to the realization, I don't need to know why. I've had many people throughout the years point their finger in my face very angrily. You tell me why your God allowed this to happen. I don't know. But he did. I make no apologies for God. We don't know why things happen. Why does some nut go into school and kill children? Why? Why does God allow that to happen? He's God. He's God. And then you get some ignoramus who says, well, God didn't have anything to do with it. Well, that's scary. If God didn't have anything to do with it, who's in control? Doesn't sound like God is. That's scary. God had a lot to do with it. Well, you explain to me why. Don't need to. All we need to do is just get a clear vision of God and realize that He's God. My responsibility and your responsibility and our privilege and our opportunity is to just lean on Him. To just trust Him. And if we could do that without always looking for answers, you'll drive yourself nuts looking for answers. There may not be any answers to be had other than this, God. And that ought to be enough to put our minds at ease. God. People say all the time, well, when I get to heaven, I'm going to ask God so-and-so. That's basically what Job was saying. He said, if I could just approach God, I'd ask Him so-and-so. But once God reveals His glory, that's all foolishness. That's all nonsense. God reveals His glory, and you realize the majesty of God, you realize your own insignificance, and all you can do is say, "Behold, I am vile. I spoke about things that I do not understand." And as we've said before, a lot of false doctrine would be avoided if people would just quit trying to explain what you do not know. Again, we refer to it all the time, Deuteronomy 29, the secret things belong to God. There are many things that God does not reveal to you and I. All we need to do is trust Him. We don't have to invent a new doctrine to explain it. We don't have to explain. We do need to trust. So all I pray that we would experience what Job experienced that day. Job suffered terrible things. But really, when Job was in the most danger was not when he lost his 10 children, not when he lost his wealth, not when his wife came and said, "Curse God and die," not when he lost his health. When Job was in the most danger was when he began to go down that wrong road and began to question God. And that's when you and I are in the worst danger. And that's when God showed up and God revealed Himself and spared Job. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us, first song.